Good morning, everyone. Today I'm going to present my research on illness representation models of mental illness in two different ethnic samples. So I have no financial disclosures to report. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the Institute of Health at Rutgers University, which is where I was a postdoc for 2 years when I started this study. The Office of Global Health, which is where I am now at Robert Wood Johnson, has been super supportive of continuing this research. And the South Asian Total Health Initiative is a program that helped me get access to an Asian Indian population. I wanted to study these concepts when I was in graduate school in Colorado and didn't have any access to a South Asian population there. So they've been instrumental in getting me access to South Asian population. And the rest of the agencies cooperated in terms of collecting data. And we had a great team of research assistants who volunteered their time to collect this data. And I'm super appreciative of all the efforts that they've put in since this was all volunteer. So I have basically two aims in the study. The first one is to describe the models of illness and treatment representation for both schizophrenia and major depression in Asian Indians, and then to determine if those models differ significantly from Caucasians' models. So what we know is in the 1950s, it was pretty much understood that lay appraisals of mental illness were important. And why were they important? Because before mental health services are accessed, folks needed to actually understand what symptoms constituted an illness, and then what kinds of treatment would they suggest this person get, if any, what kinds of measures could they take to alleviate these symptoms. In 1991, Pesca-Solido developed a network episode model, which really drove this point home, where she stresses the importance of social networks in treatment. So if you can look here. What she has is sort of the sociodemographic factors that we're interested in. And really here, we're interested in ethnicity, whether somebody is Asian Indian or Caucasian. And what we're studying is right here, the beliefs and attitudes towards mental illness in these folks. And what we hope to understand by studying these factors is, right on the right-hand side on the bottom right here, it are sort of how people access mental health treatment, sort of how often do they go, do they even go in the first place, those sorts of things. So that's sort of the theoretical model that I was using when I conducted this study. And now, what are illness representations? I wanted to define that a little bit. Leventhal has done a significant amount of work in describing five factors that sort of define what illness representations are. Identity, basically, does somebody link symptoms that are described to a label, such as schizophrenia or as a mental illness? The timeline, do folks think that these symptoms remit, you know, over time, or is this something chronic that somebody has to deal with? What causes folks attribute to these symptoms? The consequences, how serious are these symptoms, and how much control does the person have over the symptoms? So the assumptions that I'm making in this research project are that cultural differences in both illness attributions and treatment representations will explain the disparities that we all know exist in Asians, and specifically this study looked at Asian Indians, to understand a little more of how this process, sort of unpack how this process happens. So for example, we know that the Chinese believe that mental illness is a punishment for an ancestor's misdeeds. So logically, we wouldn't think that somebody who believes that would go to a psychiatrist to alleviate somebody's mental health symptoms. They may engage in activities that might purify or reduce sort of the sting of those misdeeds of an ancestor. Similarly, African Americans, in terms of treatment representations, believe that professionals can actually help in schizophrenia and major depression, but the overarching belief is that these mental symptoms will improve on their own without any intervention. So even though they think these folks are effective, they think that for mental illness, you just need to wait it out. It's part of life to go through those kinds of symptoms. And as we all know, there are a number of disparities in mental health treatment utilization. Zhang in 1998 in a well documented study has shown that Asian Americans were less likely than Caucasians to use mental health services when they had a diagnosable DSM disorder. The difference was 36 to 56%. And a number of studies have shown that Asian Americans are less likely than Caucasians to be hospitalized, but they stay longer once they are. So what that suggests is that folks are much more in a much more severe state when they actually enter treatment. So Zhang showed when he looked at sort of these network folks who make up someone's network, what are the differences between whites and Asians in terms of even mentioning mental health problems, let alone actually seeking treatment? So to friends and family, there was Caucasians were twice as likely to mention mental health symptoms. To their regular medical doctor, you know, the difference was 13 to 3%. And to a psychiatrist or a psychologist, it was 26 to 4%. And then when we look specifically at Asian Indians, what we find is Han and Liu in 2005 looked at the medical expenditure panel survey, and they found that Asian Indians with a diagnosis are 24% less likely to use psychotropic medication than a comparative Caucasian sample. And in the UK, when they looked at emergency room admissions, they found that South Asians who entered the emergency room with self-harm behaviors were less likely to follow through with psychiatric specialists as compared to their white counterparts. So let me get to describing what we did in this study. Basically, what we're doing is we collected data on Asian Indians in a convenience sample found in New York, New Jersey metropolitan area, and we compared it to Caucasians who had answered questions for the General Social Survey back in 1996. And this research with the Indians was conducted in 2008. So data was collected at 8 health fairs. The inclusion age was 18 to 65. They had to be English speaking. And they were administered a vignette that the General Social Survey included on schizophrenia or depression. And I'm going to show you that in a second. The Asian Indians were given a demographic questionnaire, a questionnaire on acculturation. And then they were either assigned to schizophrenia, major depression, or everyday troubles. Today, I'm just going to be providing you data on the schizophrenia and depression vignette folks. And then they were given an illness representation measure to sort of unpack some of this understanding of what these symptoms are. So here's a description of the schizophrenia vignette. This is exactly word for word with vignette as used by the General Social Survey. The only change is that we changed the name to identify someone who's South Asian. We kept the education level the same for a college education for both schizophrenia and major depression. And the other difference is that we just, the gender of the person in the vignette matched the gender of the person that we were interviewing. So the thing to remember with schizophrenia is that Maya is an Asian Indian woman, and we include symptoms that basically meet DSM-4 diagnosis for schizophrenia. She thought that people were making disapproving comments, they were talking behind her back, spying on her, they were hearing what she was thinking. Maya lost her drive to participate in usual work and retreated to her home. She was hearing voices. And these voices told her what to do and think, and this lasted for about 6 months. For the depression vignette, she experienced for the past 2 weeks, she had been feeling really down, had a flat, heavy feeling all day long. She wasn't enjoying things. Tasks were difficult to accomplish. It was hard to concentrate, out of energy, can't go to sleep, feels pretty worthless, and that the symptoms had lasted for about a month. So let me describe a little bit of the measure that we asked folks after they had read the vignette that you just described, that you just saw. We asked them how serious a problem these symptoms meant for this person. And again, remember, we didn't give a diagnosis. It was just those symptoms that they read in the vignette. We asked them questions on what caused these symptoms to occur, how likely these different characteristics how likely they were to play a part in developing these symptoms. So bad character, chemical imbalance, the way someone was raised, stress, a genetic problem. And then there was a question in the General Social Survey on God's will. I changed that slightly to include the concept of karma, which is basically an understanding similar to what the Chinese, what I referenced with the Chinese, that sort of one's actions in this life or a past life or one's ancestors' actions have an effect on sort of the suffering that you may have in the current life. So, and this can be sort of, God can be a mediator in that. So I decided to use that opportunity to check to see if Asian Indians believed in this concept of karma. Then we asked them questions on labels, what they thought these symptoms were. Were they actually schizophrenia or depression? Was it just a normal up and down? Was it a nervous breakdown? Would they actually describe these symptoms as mental illness or a physical illness? And one thing that I regret not doing, which I've gotten feedback on, and I want to do that going forward, is sort of asking folks what this actually is. So they were given forced choice questions here. But one thing that folks have suggested to me is now to ask them more open-ended questions to see what folks actually think the symptoms are. We asked them questions on expectation of recovery. Would the symptoms improve on their own or improve with treatment? And just for the Indians, because I didn't have any chance to go back and do this for the Caucasians, would they get back to normal and how long the recovery would take? This gives us, again, going back to Leventhal's model, an understanding of the timeline of how long it might take for something to, for these symptoms to recover, and then how much control the person has over the symptoms. Just to give you a description of the sample characteristics, they were pretty much matched on age and sex. There were no significant differences, but in education, the Indian group was slightly more educated by about 2 years, but it was significant. And this comes to play in the results, and I'll show you why in a second. The median number of years that the Asian Indians were in this country was about 12. And what we did was just take a look at t-tests to see sort of what are the average scores on all of these factors in terms of illness attributions. So the Caucasians were much more likely to call major depression and schizophrenia symptoms as serious. They implicated genetics much more strongly than the Indians did. And then they were much more likely to actually label these symptoms as mental illness or even a physical illness, potentially constituting a biological illness, and to label these symptoms as schizophrenia or depression. But the Indians were much more likely, like the African American group, to actually think that these symptoms would improve on their own. So what I did was just run regression models to test whether this education difference specifically had any effect on terms of the coefficients. And what we find is that for all of these coefficients, once we enter education into the model, the results are much more robust. So rather than thinking that our worry was that here we have a group of educated Asian Indians who potentially are going to report understanding symptoms the same way that physicians might, or that sort of white Caucasians do. So that the more educated somebody is, the more likely they have access to sort of medical or a biomedical model of illness. But what we find is that actually with increased education, that wasn't the case, that we actually see more more sort of cultural differences highlighted with this group. Then when I looked at God's will, and this was sort of more out of curiosity since this was such a culturally salient concept, what we find is that if you can look on the blue graphs, those are folks with less than a bachelor's. So I basically just cut the sample in half, looked at those without a bachelor's versus those with. And what we find is that there is a significant difference such that those without a bachelor's are more likely to implicate God's will or karma in understanding these symptoms of depression and schizophrenia. And the folks with a bachelor's or higher don't implicate it as much. So there is a significant difference in the Indian group, while in the Caucasian group, we don't have that difference, constituting an interesting interaction. And in the conclusion, I'm gonna talk a little bit about what this might suggest. For expectations for recovery, this is just for the Indians. About almost the entire sample thought that the person would get back to normal, which might suggest that folks have less of a sort of chronic understanding of symptoms. And 20%, you know, one in five thought that the person had already recovered or they would be recovering within the next 3 months, did not think of these as chronic illnesses that might potentially require intervention. And 36% of the sample thought that it would take between 1 year to never recover. So this was probably the most consistent with sort of a biomedical understanding of symptoms. And two-thirds of the sample thought that the folks described in the vignettes had control over at least some, if not all, the symptoms that were described. So despite the higher education and income of the Asian Indians compared to Caucasians, they were less likely to consider schizophrenia and depression symptoms as serious. They were less likely to see these symptoms as genetic or physical in nature, and they were less likely to label these symptoms as a mental illness or even call it what these symptoms actually described, depression or schizophrenia, and they were more likely to believe that these symptoms would improve on their own. The limitations of the study is that it is a convenient sample, non-random sample of Indians, and there were significant group differences in socioeconomic status. We were comparing groups that were 12 years apart, and the Indian group was more of an urban population versus the general social survey. What we do know, though, is with the significant group difference with education, we didn't really have that as a limitation. It actually enhanced our understanding of the results. And the implication that this really has is that in terms of recognizing illness, what we think that Asian Indians are less likely to actually recognize the illness in themselves or in somebody in their social network, and that will be related to expectations for recovery. In terms of the karma finding, what we realize is that there may be pockets where we need to target our interventions within the Asian Indians, say to the lower educated folks, to understand sort of what the role of karma is. Not to really negate it, to say, you know, karma is not part of this, but really rather to talk about how karma might suggest that you should actually go seek treatment if that is something that makes sense for that group. So we need to have more culturally specified interventions. And what I hope to do is to look at illness beliefs and stigma using these vignettes that actually provide a diagnostic label to see if they would change, and to study the link then between these attributions and actually treatment decisions. Thank you very much.
Next we have Penny Chung, who is from the University of California in Berkeley, pursuing his degree in public health and molecular and cell biology. And he's gonna talk about KAPE, which is a survey for Chinese and Vietnamese populations in the U.S., and I think it's specifically looking at epilepsy, correct?
Yes.
Great.